Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you are not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who have been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be speaking with Colin McGregor, a strength and conditioning coach who experienced his own bout with back pain when he fell on some ice in 2005. Fortunately, his industry training helped him create a program that got him back to an active lifestyle in record time. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Colin's story.
I'm originally from the UK, but I've spent most of my professional life in the USA and other parts of the world working as a strength and conditioning coach, mainly for NHL players, that's National Hockey League players. We generally worked in the off-season, rehabilitating injuries, getting players ready for the upcoming season, a lot of strength work and such. And myself, I couldn't believe at the young age of 30, I'd been in a much worse position than some of the athletes I was trying to help. And I was actually in a lot of need of my own rehabilitation. Sadly, it was a cold spring morning back in 2005. I remember it well. I slipped in some ice on my way into the car. As I caught myself, I felt this really sharp, stabbing pain in my lower back, and I knew something was definitely very wrong.
At first, Colin didn't think too much about this fall. But as the week progressed, he noticed the pain began shifting more towards his right glute, and that's when alarm bells started to ring. He recognized that he most likely had a bulging or herniated disc that was causing sciatica. Colin got a referral to a local physiatrist, and sure enough, the MRI showed a herniated disc along with another one bulging.
Yeah, the doctor told me that the sciatica pain would most likely get worse before it gets better, and he wasn't wrong. Within days of going back to work, resuming normal activities, I wasn't able to walk without agonizing pain. I basically spent my days on the floor, pumping myself full of Aleve and Excedrin. It was a horrible time.
This was not how Colin expected to be feeling in his early 30s, suffering with debilitating pain. It's tough to say why some people are more predisposed to lower back herniations than others. Sometimes it's genetics, sometimes it's repetitive movements or activities that we perform every day. It could be a previous injury from when we were younger coming back to haunt us. It could even be a combination of all of these factors. Regardless, lower back herniation and the typical following sciatica nerve pain can be debilitating, and it can completely destroy your ability to lead a normal life.
Prior to this, I've been a competitive martial artist, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, kickboxing, that type of thing, mountain bike racing, downhill, cross country, and I'm an avid gym user. And I'd felt invincible, unbreakable up until this point. And now I was struggling to get out of a car, having to ease myself into an upright position and wait for the pain to subside long enough for me to actually be able to walk. It was a real blow to my ego, my pride. I was hobbling around like an 80-year-old person, unable to pick up dinner plates or even get out of the car properly. It was one of the worst times of my life, definitely.
While Colin initially considered surgery for his back, he ultimately decided that the best path for him would be to create a rehabilitation plan, drawing on his own knowledge and expertise, as well as on teachings from Dr. Guy Voyer, a well-known back rehabilitation specialist. Colin's rehabilitation was successful, and he was able to regain full strength without surgery.
Yeah, over the years, as more injuries cropped up, I used the same approach to rehabilitate myself over and over again. I've had numerous injuries, which I'll talk about later. Being a professionally trained conditioning coach, I knew I had to go back to the drawing board, so to speak, look at what works. And my body kept testing me over the years. Each time I would set a course of rehab for myself. I remember one time I fell down a flight of stairs, twisted my knee, ended up tearing the meniscus. I proceeded to rehab my knee, as well as all the other injuries. But it wasn't until a year later when I tweaked it again. I should get an MRI done. You know, what exactly is going on here? Go to the doctor, and he's like, whoa, that's a bad one. That's a torn meniscus. How do you feel? And he goes, well, I feel fine. He goes, well, that's a third grade meniscus tear. You should have an operation. And that's when we actually realized that it happened the year before, but I just plowed through it, did the rehab. And I'm like, well, doc, I feel pretty good. I can squat, run, jump, pretty much do everything I need to do, you know? And he's like, well, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it.
Since completing his own rehabilitation successfully, Colin has worked with hundreds of people over the years who have suffered from chronic lower back pain. He often gets referrals from neurologists and orthopedic surgeons due to the success that he's had. Colin, your story is incredible, and it highlights how back surgery is often not the only solution for an injury or for pain.
In fact, most spine doctors will say that 80% of their patients do not need spine surgery, and that non-invasive treatments are almost always the first course of action.
What made you feel confident that you could rehabilitate yourself? And were you afraid that you could potentially make your condition worse?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when it first happened, it was March 2005, and it was initially the back pain and such and some sciatica pain. And at first, I didn't go to the literature. You know, I sort of thought, oh, I'll be fine, as always. And then I remember the day I was squatting, actually, and I squatted a bit too deep. And I felt something go in my back again. And that's when I realized after a following MRI, I'd herniated even more of the disc. It was in a much worse position. And that's when I said, right, you've got to take this very seriously now, because who knows what's going to happen with your leg, you know, nerve damage, etc. And luckily, I'd started the course with Dr. Guy Voyer, who was the back specialist. So we were learning special stretches, which were decompression stretches to help discs to reabsorb back into the canal. So I was starting with that. I was also quite lucky in that the neurologist we used to train in the gym, he said, go and speak to this particular doctor. He's a physiatrist who, as you will know, they're more inclined to do the conservative route. So I'd been to him and I said, look, I can do my own rehab. I know what I'm doing. I dove into the literature. I knew where to look, you know, as far as the scientific literature was concerned. So I've always been very positive and optimistic. So I thought, right, I can do this. Now, I had the choice of surgery. You know, people I knew that, oh, I can get you in next week. You know, a guy will see you, blah, blah, blah. We can get a microdiscectomy. But I do remember the words of another orthopedic surgeon we used to train. He was a knee guy. That was his thing. And he said, Colin, if it's meant to be in the body, it should stay in the body. And he also said, never let anybody come at you with a sharp knife. And he was a surgeon, yeah. Right? This was his job. But he said, Colin, once you start taking things out that are meant to be there, cartilage, disc tissue, you know, unless it's absolutely necessary, unless you've got severe nerve damage, you know, bladder problems, you want to try every conservative treatment possible. And, you know, along the way, I was like, will I make things worse? And of course, there were days where it did seem to be worse, but I just kept looking at the longer goal ahead of me, you know, 30 days, 20 days, whatever it would be. And, you know, really taking note myself, doing a lot of self-reflection of the good days and noticing they were getting better. Like I was able to do more 1 month to the next, you know. So a lot of self-reflection was definitely necessary during this period. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so many important points you make in there, Colin, that you say so easily, and these are big realizations, you know, for our listeners. I mean, you've lived through it, and it seems obvious, you know, to us now, but your story really highlights one of the lessons that we obtain from our doctors on our medical and scientific board. And we, you know, they talk about this through our Spine Talks platform. We educate people in all of the ways that we educate the foundation. And that is that you have to really understand if surgery is the thing that's going to fix your problem. And you said something really important there, which is that unless it's really necessary, try to use other modalities to heal yourself. And I think that's so, so critical, because there are situations where surgery isn't going to help. It isn't going to work. There are situations where surgery isn't necessary. There are other things that can work and that can help. And then there are the situations where nerve damage is happening, there's a structural problem, and the only way to alleviate that and save the nerve, avoid paralysis, you know, avoid bowel or urinary problems is to have the surgery. And so it's really something that you need to get multiple opinions on. And we say that all the time in the foundation, get a second opinion, right? I mean, I think you are lucky to be knowledgeable, you know, as a trainer, as an athlete. And we're trying to share that message with everybody that if this isn't something that you do in your career, how do you know? How do you get that information?
It's very true. I mean, listen, I was lucky. I went to, you know, I read the research about, you know, back surgery success rates. You know, if your disc is, if you've got a sequestered disc, of course, then it's more problematic. If you've got, you know, genetic issues with anterior lithosis, or, you know, the lumbar vertebrae have shifted forward or backwards and it's a genetic thing, then potentially you could be up for surgery. But You're so true in the fact that, you know, like you go to who you think is your practitioner, your doctor who's there to look out for you. But I was told this when I first moved to the US. I would say, like, when you get a regular doctor, find one who's older, who's been in the practice a long time. He's not been swayed by the drug companies and all this kind of stuff, because a lot of them will just give you the generic response. Oh yeah, herniation. They won't look at you. They'll look at the MRI. You know, they don't actually give you any particular tests. Oh, you got a herniated disc. Okay, so next week we'll get you in there, hospital for special surgery, microdiscectomy, boom, you'll be fine, you know? And then, of course, was it 40%, you know, failure rate or whatever, the person re-herniates above or below, or the same disc, of course. And then it's just this horrible path. You just keep going down surgery after surgery, then you're going to get a cage put in. So I do talk about it very blasé in the fact that, oh, you know, this is what I did and da-da-da. But I keep telling people all the time, you know, get a second opinion. You're not that bad. You know, if you can't walk, if it's the nerve is, when they go in and have a look at you, the nerve is bright red, you know, it's close to dying, whatever, that's a serious issue, right? But generally, I think it's 80%, as we said before, 80% of people, surgery is not needed, you know?
Yeah. And I think you kind of went through a lot of things there. There's spondylolisthesis, which is the vertebrae, you know, sliding back and forth across each other. There are disc herniations, which is another kind of condition. There's microdiscectomy, which is a certain kind of procedure. There are cage implants, which is done for certain kinds of procedures. So there is a range of things in the surgical and the operative universe that patients might need to have. In my case, I had a ski injury. I had a spondylolisthesis. I had nerve damage, disc was crushed, no disc left, you know, bone crushing nerve, getting paralysis in my feet, and I had to have surgery. I had a fusion, I had an implant, and I, you know, 2 weeks after surgery, had no pain and here I am to tell that good story. So in the right set of circumstances, it is the right thing to do. There's a study, there's a really interesting study, a couple of studies that a number of our doctors talk about, and that is that, you know, if you took an average person off the sidewalk, walking along, you pull someone off the sidewalk and you do an x-ray of their spine, they've got disc herniations in there that they didn't even know about, right?
Exactly.
So much of the time, because we're alive, because we are organic, because we live on planet Earth and gravity is pulling us down, because we do things, we lift children or we garden or we whatever, you know, wear and tear happens. And so there is going to be some change in your spine over time. And the question is, when does it become a problem?
Yeah.
Right? It becomes a problem when there's pain or when there's paralysis, nerve damage.
Exactly.
Right. And so the decision-making gets to be challenging. Some people can't tolerate the pain. Well, maybe the pain is a message about nerves that are being damaged. Or sometimes pain can be alleviated with excellent training procedures. I have a question. When you talked with your doctor about your plan to rehabilitate yourself, was your doctor or doctors, were they supportive and receptive of that?
They were. You know, what I've always done is I've explained my background and the theory and what I'm going to do, which is usually on the lines of, you know, segmental stability, core stability, changing how I move, avoiding flexion for the first 4 hours of the day, which is a big thing as well. And I've had, again, touch wood and been lucky, I've always had a nice reception to that. You know, I've had clients who have spoke to their doctor and said, no, you need surgery. And just as a random you know, example of it, two people who they have nerve issues when they're moving around, but when they lie down, there's no nerve issue. And when they had their MRIs, the doctors were like, well, there's no, I don't see any, you know, symptomatic issue there. Da, da, da. And I said, yeah, but you do an MRI lying down, right? And depending on the time of day you do it, there won't be as much compression. And the guy was like, oh, why wouldn't the doctor tell me that? And I was like, well, it's just because they don't look at the bigger picture sometimes. You know, it's like, some do, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm generalizing. Yeah. You know, but you're manifesting symptoms of nerve issues. Yeah. But the MRI doesn't say that. And this is the thing I talk about a lot when it comes to, you've got 20 minutes with a doctor or half an hour or 10 minutes. At one time, you used to walk in the room and the doctor would look at how you move, how you handled yourself, how you held yourself, your posture, if you were depressed when you spoke to him about your issues, and all those things would go in his head before he did an MRI, before he did an X-ray. You know, what do you do? What's your job? Mm-hmm. What's this? And as I said, that, again, we're going back to this thing about asking for a second opinion or going to a different specialist because, you know, exhaust all possibilities because sometimes they don't have the time to really look at you. You're just another generic person with a herniation. Off you go to the surgery, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's such a good point. You know, talking about putting the time in to get a second opinion. And I think oftentimes, you know, the stigma that is out there is that, oh, if you have a back surgery, you're going to have another back surgery and then another and another. So I would say that's going to take a lot of time. So if you think it's going to take a lot of time to get a second opinion, if you get it wrong, that's going to take even longer time. So put the time in at the front end to get it right. There's a very famous surgeon on our medical and scientific board, and he says something interesting in Spine Talks where he says, there are a lot of snake oil salesmen out there in spine. So make sure you go to a good one, a highly trained one, a reputable surgeon who's specialty trained in spine, and get the right answers for you. And that same surgeon, you know, is one of the many who says non-operative care is our first line of treatment. So if you go to a spine surgeon, surgery shouldn't be the first thing that they recommend unless it is absolutely necessary for the condition that you have.
Yeah. And, you know, a really good thing to do as well, which people don't realize, is if you don't know if it's going to be surgery, if the doctor says, look, let's try the conservative treatment first, you know, stick with the conservative treatment because even if you've got to get surgery, you're going to go into that surgery stronger than you were before, which means your rehabilitation will start at a higher level. You know, we used to do a lot of, we called it prehab, prehabilitation.
Such a good point. I'm so glad we're talking about this. Go ahead.
No, it's true. You know, and I've had guys with their ACL, you know, anterior cruciate ligament, where we said, we're going to do everything we can to get your vastus medialis as strong as possible, your hamstrings, your quads, et cetera, et cetera. So if it does come to the case where, you know what, you're going to have surgery if you want to play lacrosse or football, whatever it could be, at least you're starting from a higher place than you were before. Because the deconditioning that I see I've got a guy just now, he's 52 and we're doing video stuff and I could see by his knee push-up, he was so weak. And I said, look, you've got to get yourself stronger. I said, because even if you have to get surgery, you're going to be starting way down here. Do what you can, do 10 second plank, do whatever it could be, because you're not doing yourself any favors by doing nothing.
And that's where, that's such an important point. That's where a physical therapist or physiatrist can work with you to give you exercises to strengthen those core, whether it's your, you know, the core muscles that support your neck, your thoracic spine, your lumbar spine, getting those deep musculature involved in strengthening activity is so critical, not just for rehabbing, you know, post-surgery, but for preventative things going forward. So that is such an important point. We talk about that a lot. There are some simple exercises you can do, you know, many yoga poses that are good for your back. And that's, again, that's an advantage that you have in your line of work, that you know that. And that's what we're here to tell everyone, right? Here's how you get better. Here's how you stay better. And, you know, the doctor can do their part, but you've got to do your part too.
You know, it comes, I mean, one of the things I noticed in the US was people want instant gratification.
Not just in the US.
It's getting like that in the UK as well, I can assure you. Because one of the reasons why generally there's less surgery in Europe for back issues is because they tell you, oh, go away for 3 months and do rehab, go away for 6 months and do rehab, because the social medicine takes a lot longer to process everything. So sure. Eventually after 3 or 4 months, the person feels better. They don't need to get the operation. Not always, but you know, people want instant gratification. And sometimes, you know, in today's society, things, they want them yesterday, right? And the kind of work that I do with people, and I'm sure you guys do as well, it's a slow process, right? You've got to start at this level. What can the person do? You know, what's their body going to handle? You know, what can we add to it each week or each time we have a session? And some people, they don't see it fast enough. And that's where the psychology starts to come in. You've got to use some psychology with them as well, because they can go down the route of catastrophizing and stuff, which is not good.
Yeah. The mental health component of pain is very real and really tough to manage for sure. And I think that, you know, what's the expression? The soup's not done, right?
It just
takes time. There's some things that take time. And if you stick with it, you will see progress. And that, you know, that has to be a way to encourage you to continue, you know, on the path that you're on. You know, a smart therapist, physical therapist here in the US said to me, you know, Rita, the body has an amazing capacity to heal. You know, we get injured, but we can heal. And, you know, that seems so obvious and basic, but we forget that when we have an injury or if we're in pain, we forget that we can heal. So it's finding the path to healing, right? So you've mentioned Dr. Guy Vallière. Am I saying it wrong?
Vallière, yeah, he's French. Yeah, he's from Marseille in France, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that strategy.
His strategy, so he was an osteopath originally. He'd done various medical schooling back in France. And for his own thesis, he actually was part of his study. He was looking at, because he himself had 3 or 4 herniated discs from a car crash. And part of his studying was in the fascia of the body. And of course, he realized it's all interconnected, right? And if you put the body in certain positions, stretches, specific kind of stretches, you can actually target specific areas of the spine and create what's called a decoaption, which means basically decompression. So you create some space.
Yes.
So he developed a system of stretches for the entire spine, which is the first course that I did with him. And that's what I do with a lot of the clients. And I've explained the methodology to neurologists and, you know, orthopedics. And they go, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. I understand it. And it's a requirement of opposite forces. So you've got one force pushing one way, one force pushing the other way, and you're targeting one around about one specific area on the spine, and it helps to decompress. So it will take one vertebra up. I mean, we're talking millimeters here. And what he did for his own thesis was he did x-rays of, probably couldn't do this today with the x-rays, right, in ethics. He did x-rays before and after the stretch on the participants in the study. And of course, that was showing, you know, the vertebra had moved apart. So it was creating decompression at specific areas. So, you know, that's what that methodology, along with other different types of movements and stretching, fascial stretching of the body around about the hips and stuff, and maintaining mobility of your pelvic girdle. So I'm a large proponent of those, but I do a lot of the classic, you know, core work as well. But Guy himself, he still teaches in the US. He was teaching in, I did the course in New York many, many moons ago, but he's in Toronto. I know, I think he's been in LA as well. And it's quite interesting when I type, you know, his information in now into Google, you know, there's a lot more people are doing his system.
Well, and I think we know more about myofascial release and the impact that that has on movement and joints. And you talk about, you know, soft tissue sort of tension, and releasing that tension can release pressure on spine and the spine spaces. So it makes sense, right? It's just an anatomical structural thing that makes sense, and figuring out how to release that and understanding the role of fascia in our bodies is, I think, a relatively new thing.
Yeah, it's funny. I went to it was one of the libraries in New York, and one of the medical libraries that I got special permission to go and get this very, very old book on the fascia. It was one of the only few in English. And I took photocopies of the pieces I wanted. And it was something that was studied decades ago in the 30s and 40s, you know, when they were into the cadavers and stuff and learning more about physiology. But it was forgotten about, you know, and it's only been the last 15, 20 years or so, because when you do cadaver work in the hospitals, you just cut through it and go straight into the organs and the skin and stuff, you know. It's definitely starting to show up a lot more in people's modalities and what they're using. But I see he's still going, I think he must be in his late 60s now, and he's still teaching. So,
Interesting. So interesting. Well, so I know you are now, you're currently working with clients who have been, had various diagnoses for reasons for their lower back pain. Are you seeing that others can rehabilitate themselves? Do they need to work with someone directly? Is it something, can people empower themselves to do this on their own? And if yes, what kinds of exercises do you recommend and how do people find out about that?
Sure. Yes, you can. If you've been given the go-ahead from your doctor, you say, look, hey, this is achievable with conservative treatment, then I think, you know, at least 80% of people can do it on their own. Now, when I say can do it, there is a lot of other things about that because you need to have the time, the motivation. Yes, like everybody's a bit different in how what they're driven by, you know, self-motivation. So I have people that I've seen once, I've given them 5, 6, 7 different exercises and stretches. I've never seen them again. And then I find out later, they send me somebody and the guy's like, oh yeah, he had a great result with you. You know, he was super happy. And I only seen him once, you know, because he went away and did the work. And some people are much more motivated to do it themselves. Other people need guidance, definitely. So, you know, some people I will see them maybe one-to-one a few times a week. Maybe you'll see them once a week and you'll check in on them. I tend to use a lot of kind of like a buddy system where you'll give them work to do and they have to fill in a sheet or send me a WhatsApp message or something because other things get in the way. So I did a postgrad in psychology, sport and exercise psychology. So I tried to use some of that as well with people. So yes, they can do it, but there is times when you have to realize I need to see someone because again, another quick example, I was giving a guy some work to do and I said, look, try to avoid morning flexion, first 4 hours of the day, you know, spine hygiene, whatever you want to call it. He came to see me and he had a backpack on and he just puts it down. He just bends forward and I'm like, spine hygiene. Yeah. He's, oh yeah, I forgot. You know, and then you realize that, and I say this a lot, you can have the best rehab program in the world with the best rehabilitation specialist in the world. You can go 5 times a week, right? That's 5 hours. You've got 168 hours in the week. If you mess up the other 163 hours of the week, you're not going to get the best out of that. You have to have ownership of what you're doing, right?
Have to have ownership of what you're doing. I love that. So true.
Yeah, you got to own it, you know? So, and the types of the basic exercises that I generally start with. So somebody comes to me, it could be a herniated disc, bulging disc, sciatic pain, you know, chronic back pain. And the other thing I do with people as well is a lot of people, again, depends on the personality. They want to know what is the specific cause of this. And I say, look, what would you rather do? Would you rather get better or would you rather know what the cause was, right? And there's usually a pause, right? I said, because I could tell you 5, 10 different things that could be the cause of this pain. Genetics, you fell off your bike as a kid, you know, your age, you're tall. Tall people have more issues than shorter people. It's just to do with mechanics and levers. You know, and I tried to get them out of that mindset and into the, I want to get better, whatever it takes concept. Forget about what put me here because it could be a one-off accident, it could be a cumulative load. So generally what I'll start with is they come in, we assess them or I assess them and I give everybody typically some sort of core work. So simple front plank, if that's too hard for them, which it can be, then I'll modify the front plank, you know, maybe up against a wall or something like that, just so they get used to bracing their core to teach them how to basically engage the core muscles. I'll also give them avoiding flexion before noon, which is really bizarre. The study was 92 or 94. It was done on chronic back patients to avoid flexion for the first 4 hours of the day. And they followed up 18 months later, and I'll get the figures incorrect, but it was a significant reduction in days of pain level, and all it was avoiding flexion for the first 4 hours of the day. It's crazy, right? I give everybody that as well. So you get some core work, avoiding flexion, and then typically I'll give them these decompression stretches. Their name is El Doigt, which is French for a longitudinal decompression, blah, blah, in French. I can't do it. I can't say it in French. Okay. We would just call it longitudinal decompression. I'll give them two or three of those for the lumbar spine or cervical or thoracic, whatever their issue is. And typically, because the pelvis is such a big, you know, part of the whole body, I will give them some hip flexor stretching, some glute stretching to keep the hips mobile and also try to keep the pelvis from being tilted. I want to give this person maybe 5, 6, 7 things to do maximum the first time, because if you give them too much, they're not going to do it. It's got to be achievable.
Right. You have to make it something easy to remember, right? People have to be able to five is a lot. 5 things is a lot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a little bit of core work. And I might even, if they've got a band or something, if they're going to do stuff at home, give them just some simple upper body, like a one-arm press with a band, a one-arm row with a band, something that makes them feel like they're doing something. Because another issue I've found over the years is people think of rehabilitation as standing on a Bosu, counting to 20 on one leg, picking your nose, right? It's as boring as can be. So I try to incorporate rehabilitation into actually doing other work, meaning you're working your upper body a little bit. So they actually feel like they're getting a workout, but at the same time, it is actually a rehabilitation workout they're doing. If that makes sense. So
yeah, that's active stretching and those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, when you do a one-arm band, so you got a band, you can Walmart or Amazon, cost you like $10, right? And you do a one-arm standing chest press. You have to engage your core, otherwise you get pulled back. So you're actually engaging the core without actually knowing it, but you're working your chest. You feel like, I'm working. You're tricking the body.
But
they're not just sitting on the floor holding their stomach in or something like that. Which, you know,
right.
So
right. It's activating, right? As opposed to trying to think it through. It's really just activating it.
Yeah, and because sometimes generic physiotherapy that people are given is the bog standard. You know, it's like, okay, give me the plank for a minute, do the side plank for 30 seconds, stretch your hamstrings, stretch your glutes, blah, blah, go home, ice, heat.
Right. You know. And those aren't bad things, but if you're not doing them effectively or really activation with those, then it's not effective. So this has just been so interesting and so informative. Let's summarize what we've talked about today. Why don't you give me a summary and then I'm going to try to do a summary.
Sure. I believe that at least 80% of people with lower back issues coming from chronic longevity pain, it could even be from stress, which is a big part. We didn't touch on stress issues, but that as well. Be it a physical modality issue, herniated disc, like curvature of the spine, this kind of issue. I would say at least 80% of those issues can be dealt with conservative treatments. I believe it can be dealt with. I would say probably 50% of people can do it on their own with the right guidance. There's a lot of bad guidance on YouTube and various other things out there. But with the right guidance from the right, you know, tutors and professionals, you can definitely do it on your own. I would say it's definitely more beneficial to have somebody to check in with who can guide you, check your, you know, be it by video or one-to-one, check what you're doing physically, and definitely give it at least, I would say you should see benefits within 2 weeks at least of doing from where you were to that point. At least you should see some benefit in 2 weeks. If you're not seeing any benefit within 2 weeks, look at the modality and think, what do I need to change? Do I need to go back to my doctor? Do I need to do this, etc.? I do think that with the right management, you can get there. And I know that might seem a bit odd because, you know, I've done all these things and I'm just like, oh yeah, I'll do it again, whatever. And that's maybe just my character, but I, you know, finding positive people around about you as well. I'll just quickly say this. I had a chap who he had all the signs of he had chronic pain in that mentally he was going into that catastrophizing circle. He went to see a chronic pain specialist who said to him, oh yeah, most people with chronic pain, they never get rid of it.
Wow.
And I just went, you do not say that to somebody who is on that borderline, right? So that's just to bring it back to, you know, get good people around about you, get the support of your family, get a good doctor to support you. It makes a huge, huge difference. If you have all of those things in your plan, then I would say the future definitely looks good for that person.
Yeah. And, you know, those are such great points. And there's an expression that you hear people say, retrain your brain. Well, it's very easy to say that cute rhyming phrase.
Of course.
But it's really challenging to do. And it's much more, you're much more likely to be able to retrain your brain if you are surrounded by positive, empowering, you know, friends, family, support structure, healthcare providers who are on that journey with you.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I, you know, what I'm hearing today, you know, most of the time, you know, non-operative treatment can take care of people's pain. It's the first line of defense when you've got a neck or back problem. Educate yourself about what is happening. Understand what the spine looks like, what the parts are of the spine. The more you educate yourself, the better outcome you're going to have. Find a doctor who you trust and who you like. Get a second opinion and, you know, take care. Do the prehab. Understand how to care for your spine and do those things to either prehab for surgery or preventative long-term care of your spine. Because life is a degenerative process,
yeah.
Right? It's a degenerative process. And we want to help ourselves as we go along through time. So I think this has just been such an interesting and informative conversation.
Oh, it's been great.
Colin, all of the you know, things you put yourself through in your adventurous life, and you've learned how to manage and deal and treat yourself and share what you've learned with others and help others on their journey. And I think that 2 week time frame, that's a really good metric for people to think about if they are trying to do some of these, you know, yeah, physical therapy or non-operative treatments. They're not seeing improvement in 2 weeks. It's time to reevaluate. And I think that's a really helpful metric to put out there. So
definitely. I mean, I'm sure you've heard people who go to the chiropractor and you say, how long? Oh, been about 10 years now. And you go, okay. It's different if you're an athlete and you're just getting tuned up just to keep doing what you're doing as an athlete. But if you're a general population person and you're going to the same physio or whatever for 10 years for the same issue and you're not any better, it's time to reevaluate, I think.
Time to reevaluate, yeah. Hopefully it won't take 10 years to figure
exactly
that. Colin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
We can't wait to share your story with our community. We know that this story will help others who might be just starting their own spine health journey. They might be feel alone or confused. They don't really know where to start. And this kind of information is so incredibly valuable to people. We so appreciate you coming on with us and sharing your story and what you've learned. So thank you.
You're very welcome. No, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed, you know, sharing my own story. So it was really nice. Thank you.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain every year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.